and he was well known for his storytelling. He would tell stories at the drop of a hat. And people questioned him about that. Rabbi, what is it with all these stories? The truths of Judaism are straightforward. Why are you always telling these stories? And the rabbi thought about it. Let me tell you a story. A long time ago, but not as long ago as all that, truth walked naked upon the world. And there were those few rare souls who saw the naked truth and found him comely. But most people, they were disgusted. They were ashamed. At the very least, they were embarrassed. And they shunned him. They turned their backs against him. They closed their doors against him, and they would not invite him into their homes. This distressed him greatly. He wanted nothing more than to visit with everybody in the town, to sit down with them and have long and interesting discussions. He was crestfallen. He decided to go to visit his sister and ask her advice. Perhaps you will not be surprised to learn that the name of Truth's sister was Story. Truth went to Story's home and knocked upon her door. She opened it to him. Oh my, she looked lovely. She was wearing a flowing tunic over striped pantaloons. Her dark, long hair was bound and braided with ribbons and beads. Her hands were covered with jewels, and on her feet were embroidered satin slippers. She looked at her brother and saw right away that he was troubled. She said, "Come in, come in. We need to talk." And she led him into her courtyard, a place of such peace and beauty. And they sat down together on a bench. "Tell me, my brother, what concerns you? Why is it that when I walk about the town, people turn their backs against me, they close their doors against me, they do not invite me into their homes, but when you, my sister, walk about the town, people follow after you. They reach for your garments. They invite you into their homes. Why is that?" Story said, "Truth. It is difficult to look upon the naked truth. Come, I will give you some of my garments. It will soon be a different story." And she had next to the bench a great chest, which she opened up. And she began lifting out fabrics of all different kinds, silks and satins, brocades, linens, and just all different kinds of garments. And Truth dressed himself in these. And then he walked out into the town. The people saw him. They were intrigued by him, attracted to him. They followed after him, and they invited him into their homes. "Now you see," said the rabbi, "Truth did not change his form one whit, but by wearing the garments of Story, he was so much more acceptable. And that is why I tell stories."
I wish I could tell a story like that.
Take her classes.
I think I'm going to have to take your class, January, but I don't think I can measure up. Okay, next we have live, but on Zoom, Kathleen Haar, representing one section of Writing for Ourselves and Others. These classes, some of the classes are offered year-round, this being one of them. And this particular section one is facilitated by the lovely Nina Kaplan.
and moi. I say moi because Kathleen speaks French, and so I wanted her to know what I was talking about. And now Kathleen Parr with O, soundscape.
Thank you. What I still hear from long ago summer nights in the Santa Cruz Mountains isn't a drop in the bucket or what sloughs off a duck's back. It isn't the muted echo of the pond that stays still for the skipping of stones, nor the noisy cascade dashing over the cliff. It's the rippling sound of the creek behind our cabin. The snowmelt murmurs in the quiet under stars. Ankle deep, no wider than it had to be, scaled for small legs to jump it, almost. Fulsome for its size, it wasn't measured, wasn't contained, not doled out for sprinklers, cisterns, or vases. It meandered with intent, wending its way in and out of forests of black oak and pine, through air infused with the peppery scent of bay laurel. When it came up against dam-like boulders, it split into two parts, momentary tributaries circling around and past dam-like boulders. It split, momentary tributaries circling around and past the granite obstacles. Downstream, the cleaved portions pulled back together like a wound healing. Where the mountain range flattens toward the coast, the water knit itself into streams, folded itself into the river. The creek tasted the brine when it turned the last bend, just before emptying itself into the sea.
Thank you, Kathleen. I'm pretty sure if you look up the word wordsmith in the dictionary, we'll see Kathleen's picture. Okay, next we will hear from the other section of Writing for Ourselves and Others, this one facilitated by January Kiefer and Dennis Smith. This will be Sandy McLean, whom I just met and who apparently owns Lake Superior. My Lake Superior.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's yours.
It's as big and beautiful as an ocean, I say to myself every year when I return to the southern part, the shore of Lake Superior. Peering out to this great lake, I see the deep, dark blue waters to the north, east, and west. Lowering my eyes to the shoreline, the water turns to white foam. Gentle waves caress small stones at the water's edge. On the horizon is an oar boat, silhouetted against the sky. Undoubtedly it is headed west to Duluth, Minnesota, or Superior, Wisconsin. Oar boats, as the locals call them, steamboats is their official name, carry millions of tons of iron ore, grain, cement, and coal through the five Great Lakes of the United States and Canada. Modern steamboats are much larger and lower than when I worked on one during the summer of my senior year in college. No longer is there a pilot house on the forward end of the ship. Instead, a tall, lean, five-story cabin is on the after end, where the pilot house, men's cabins, mess halls, and lounges must be. In the past, a large ship was over 600 feet, two football lengths and 10. Today, steamboats are over 1,000 feet, thus over three football fields in length. Born and raised on the shores of Lake Superior as a child and a youth, I never lived more than several miles from its shores. The lake was a place we visited often for picnics, swimming, and fireside. As a young child, I knew it was there before my father and grandfather It will continue to be there after I leave. Swimming was always a challenge in Lake Superior. It was always cold, sometimes colder than others. If the wind was blowing off the shore, the warm top water would blow into the lake. Swimming then was all but impossible. If the wind was blowing off the lake, the warm top water would blow onto the shore. Then it would be warm enough for swimming. As small children, we were told how the lake could be overpowering. Small and large ships could be crushed against its rocky shores. Storms could blow up quickly. Waves reach heights of over 30 feet. A steamboat can break into thirds because the forward end is on one wave and the other end after end is on another. With nothing to support the middle of the ship breaks into thirds. Such was the case with the famous Edmund Fitzgerald. It is with admiration, appreciation, a sense of awe and love that I return to Lake Superior and pay my respects. I walk to the shore and say softly, I'm back. A native son who thought of you all year. I listen for the lake to respond. It does with soft breezes, beauty, and timelessness. When I pass on, my ashes are to be sprinkled along the southern shore of Lake Superior. Hopefully then I'll be able to hear its gentle waves each morning. See the sun rise over the lake in the east, see the sunset in the west. Catch its fresh breeze throughout the spring, summer, and fall. Observe the grandeur of snow and ice during the winter months. Wait for spring and the wildflowers to bloom along the shore. In the fall, watch the leaves turn bright red, gold, and brown.
Kind of like wow. We have offered at Ollie, we do offer several memoir classes. I think that we all benefit from telling our life stories, from sharing our life stories. And then